Many of us are involved as leaders and board members of new or emerging nonprofits, whether working with the homeless, the environment, animals, children, or one of the many, many types of charitable organizations. Every new leader wonders, are we doing this right? Enter Renee McGivern and Nonprofit Spark. Each week, Renee and her guests walk through an area of nonprofit work in clear, concise, and practical themed shows. Whether it's about best practices, developing and keeping a volunteer force, fundraising, effective governance, or hiring staff, to name but a few, you can boost your nonprofit know-how and confidence. Renee and Nonprofit Spark have arrived.
Welcome to Nonprofit Spark, a show for leaders and board members who want new ideas to take new actions and produce new results. When you think about how you're communicating with your donors, your community, your constituents, you ever wonder or have this nagging feeling that maybe you're not spending your time and resources well? Do you feel frustrated that your communication is scattershot or ineffective? Then you need a communication strategy. My guest this week is James Howe, president of Communicate and Howe, and he's based in Kitchener, Ontario. We hone in on six elements of a content strategy that will give you clarity about who you want to communicate with, why, and with what tools. You know, too often we miss the strategy part and jump right into a plan of action, and yet, isn't it critically important to be clear about why you're doing what you're doing? In our experience, taking time to develop a communication strategy makes everything else you do fall into place. And what a relief. James started a nonprofit communications work with the Daily Bread Food Bank in Toronto and in the development office of the University of Waterloo. He was director of communications for the YMCAs of Cambridge and Kitchener-Waterloo just before starting his consulting firm. Now, if you want to boost your communication in 2014, then formulate a nonprofit communication strategy so you can confidently use your time and resources. It'll help you ask for a bigger budget, too. Well, I hope you enjoy the show. Welcome to Nonprofit Spark, James.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right, James, tell us a little bit about you. How did you get involved in nonprofits in the first place?
Well, I had an experience at one point with a firm that did communications for large American retailers on customer service excellence and loss prevention and so forth. And I found it a very interesting way to use my skills. I really wanted to use them in a way that helped to make the world a better place and had some very concrete results in terms of enhancing people's lives.
Very good. So tell us a little bit about this Daily Bread Food Bank.
Daily Bread Food Bank is Toronto's largest food bank, and that's where one of my earlier communications positions for a nonprofit. And I was actually, that was 2004, I was their very first dedicated communications person. And mm-hmm. So they were at a point where they really needed to professionalize what they were doing. Their brochure at that point was a badly desktop published, photocopied yellow paper, folded in half, and
yes.
It just did not fit the largest food distribution organization in Toronto. I think we were delivering about 17 million pounds of food a year at that point. So
wow.
We really needed to kind of figure out how to communicate in a more professional way and in a way that was suitable for the large market with so many other charities competing for people's attention.
All right, James, why don't you tell us about the difference between a communication plan and a strategy?
An example I like to use to illustrate the difference is that having a plan is like going grocery shopping with a list, but you've essentially just put down what you think you might like to have or what you're out of or maybe something that's on special. So you have a list, and you go off to the grocery store and kind of check off everything. But that's taking a list without thinking about what's on it and what you're trying to achieve. So if you're trying to improve your health or lower your sodium or eat more local foods or something,
gotcha.
Then you have a goal. You know what you're trying to achieve. So when you go to the grocery store, you know what you're getting and why you're getting it and how these different pieces are going to work together to give you improved health.
Okay. Now, you and I before the show chatted about the importance of creating a formal communication strategy, and you mentioned that you had worked recently with the Women's Crisis Services of Waterloo Region in Ontario there.
Right.
And why don't we use that as an example about creating a formal communication strategy, and then we chatted about some elements. So the first element was really, you said to me, Renee, people need to be looking at what other organizations are doing. And why don't you describe that a little bit?
Well, as part of your research phase, you got to figure out what other organizations are doing, whether there are other organizations locally or other organizations within your field. It might help you to identify best practices or give you ideas on tools and techniques that you would like to use.
Mm-hmm.
It may give you an idea on what not to do or how not to do it. It may also, you know, if everybody is doing newspaper ads, maybe you should be doing radio commercials so that you stand out. So you have to kind of figure out what's happening and what's possible so that you can figure out exactly what you want to do.
Yeah, and you know, the thing that was interesting, I just had an email come my way, and the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits is just announcing to all their members yesterday what their 2014 legislative agenda was. And I always like to go to that website to kind of see, well, how are they doing what they're doing? And then I'm guessing at and kind of figuring out why they're doing what they're doing. And they explained it in writing, but then they also had a quick video with their chief lobbyist. And she quickly described what the agenda was for 2014. And I thought, well, now why are they doing the video? Well, first of all, she's fairly new to the organization, so it was good to see her in person. You know, you could be a member and go years without ever actually seeing her because
right.
She's either
yep.
in hold up in her office or she's at our state capitol. So it was like, you know what, actually that was pretty brilliant. And it was a minute and a half long, but she got to articulate what it was that was important about the agenda, because if I wanted to read it, maybe not as interesting as hearing her say it. So that's what I like about when I look at some other organizations. I'm saying, well, they're doing it well, and why are they putting so much time and effort into that? What's the thinking behind it?
Well, exactly, and that's why for our most recent awareness campaign for Women's Crisis Services, we did an infographic and did a great job at communicating a lot of information, but easier to read than blocks of text.
It is.
At the same time, you know, I was concerned that it didn't convey the emotions about kids who are living in a home that has woman abuse. And so we wanted to do a video version of the infographic, and it had many of the same pieces of information, but we intersected it with shots of a
nice
girl who unknowingly to the parents or adults in her life was aware and was reacting to the abusive situation that was occurring once again in her home, and that helped to really give the video an emotional impact that the infographic alone didn't have.
Yes, very good. Now, we also discussed as part of a formal communication strategy talking to internal and external stakeholders as you're creating that. So what do you mean by that?
I think it's, you know, important to sit down with people and kind of get a sense of what they think about your communications efforts. What are you doing well? Where's there room for improvement? They often have ideas on where the communications efforts could go. They might say, for instance, that the brochure is not adequately communicating or marketing the organization in the professional quality manner. That might not be something that you recognized yourself, and it really helps to get that kind of perspective or even have some of those observations that you've made confirmed by other people that then helps get buy-in on making improvements in communications.
Yeah, you know, that's really good that you're actually talking to other people in the organization. Sometimes we get siloed, and frankly, we lose our objectivity in a lot of ways. So I could see when we're talking to others within the organization who know it well, hey, I missed that. That would have been a good story to tell, or actually this would be good. But the other thing that facilitates, it seems to me, James, is they may have some misconceptions about. I've had people who are like, everybody, they want a video. We all want a video. I'm like, okay, well, if you want a video, let's step back a second. What's the thinking behind it? What is it we want to accomplish? So that's a dialogue that I think is pretty healthy. Now, when you mention external stakeholders to me, how does that look?
Well, it could be done in a variety of ways. For the most recent awareness campaign for Women's Crisis Services, we did a survey as part of our early research phase, and we promoted that mainly through Facebook and Twitter, but it was available on the agency's website too, and we were just trying to get a sense of what supporters of the organization or people who were at least interested in the issues thought of some of the ideas we were proposing. One idea we were testing out at that point was it's a plug-in for basically a colored hair strand that you could put in your hair, and it's kind of like could be used like a ribbon or a bracelet or something. It's basically a symbol that you are supporting a cause. So that's one thing we wanted to, before we embarked on something like that, we wanted to get a sense whether people would actually do it. In the end, we didn't, but it was an interesting idea that we wanted to test, and we were trying to reach, in this case, women 25 to 35 who were mothers or may become mothers in that age group. We were pretty sure that Facebook was a good way to contact them, mm-hmm. but we wanted to kind of get a sense on whether that was actually the case. And so that was confirmed, and so that was a centerpiece of how we tried to deliver our content.
It's actually about engagement. It isn't like you talking at them all the time. So in asking for people's opinion and getting feedback, you're getting a sense of what matters to them, but they also get a sense that you actually care about where they're at.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, a lot of what nonprofits do is about relationship building, whether it's dealing with clients or board members or potential donors. But, you know, social media gives us new ways to build and enhance those relationships, and social media is all used most effectively is all about building relationships and developing community.
Yeah, very good. Well, you're listening to Nonprofit Spark. I'm your host, Renee McGivern, and I'm speaking this week with James Howe. He is president of Communicate and Howe. He consults with nonprofits about communication strategy, social media, public relations, online and print communications, and more. His company is based in Kitchener, Ontario. Another part of creating a formal communication strategy is identifying your audiences that you want to communicate to. And so one of the ways I do that is to formulate personas that describe sort of the quintessential people my communication is trying to reach. And what do you do? How do you go about identifying audiences for the communication? And to me, it has to get beyond donors, funders, clients. That's too big and broad.
Right. I mean, you have to try to be as specific as possible in terms of the identified group, but at the same time, you can't be too specific. But you want to be able to give some kind of demographic information. So, like, for instance, in last year's awareness campaign, we were trying to reach women 18 to 25, and this year we were trying to reach women 25, well, actually mothers,
okay,
25 to 35. And we took that approach because, I mean, the agency wants every woman in the region to know about them and know what they do and know how they can help, but it's very difficult to talk to all women at the same time with the same messages and do it effectively. So we had one campaign focused on one demographic and another set on another demographic.
Very good.
And this year, in addition to kind of brainstorming the demographic characteristics, we went so far as to create personas of, one was a woman who would be a representative of the clients that they mostly serve, especially at their shelters.
Mm-hmm.
And another one was a woman who may not be a typical shelter client, but is somebody that they knew that needed to have this kind of information, whether they ever used the shelter or not. They at least needed to have an understanding of the impact of women abuse on kids, and that the agency, for instance, had outreach programs that could help them.
Ah, so in that case, you were looking at personas that they serve or potentially could serve with their outreach services and that sort of thing. So a strategy is stepping back related to that would have been, how can we actually be serving more or reaching more women?
It kind of went back to the fact that they operate two shelters. I think there's 80 beds between the two of them. They're constantly full. About half of them at one time are occupied by kids. Pondering some more research, discovered that about 80% of those kids were 10 years and under. And you know, there's so many kids that they see in a year that it could fill up 10 primary classrooms. And, you know, when I started to get a sense of some of that information, I knew that we needed to be talking to the mothers of especially young kids and trying to make sure that they understood the impact if they found themselves in that kind of situation on their kids, so that they would seek help for themselves and as a result help their kids.
Yes, very good. Yeah, it's a really good explanation of how personas can make a difference too. It's a very focused message, and you're just cutting right to who specifically that you're trying to reach and pull in and educate. So that's really good. Now, we mentioned earlier looking at social media as part of a formal communication strategy, and you're a big fan of LinkedIn in particular, it seems like.
Well, I just think LinkedIn has a lot of untapped potential for nonprofits, and one of the areas that I see as having the greatest potential is to have a LinkedIn company page, or if nonprofits speak, a LinkedIn organization page, but they call it a company page. And essentially, like if your staff have your organization on their LinkedIn profile, if somebody clicks on that link, it doesn't go to your website, it goes to the LinkedIn company page. And that online home on LinkedIn can be next to nothing, or it can be a rich source of information for people on that very professional platform. And so there's a lot of great potential to be sharing information to staff, potential staff, donors, potential board members, and sharing it in a context where they're having their work hat on.
Oh, very good. You know what I like about that is, first of all, the professionalism of LinkedIn, you're right. It actually establishes a public identity of professionalism by being on LinkedIn. But the other piece is the website doesn't have to be everything. You know, it seems to me I like more focused websites where people are a little more certain about what they're trying to do with that website. A LinkedIn page could actually focus on some different things, and it relates to, as you say, like employment. You're going to give some slightly different information for people who would be thinking about becoming board members. You don't have to have it all on a web page.
You can even target your posts so that it goes to a specific demographic, and they give you some control over how to define that demographic. Within your company page, you can have product and services pages or programs and services pages or whatever your offering may be. You can have add a YouTube video. You can have a link not to the front of your website but to the best possible page within your website.
Yes. It's almost annual report-like.
It could be, yes.
Yeah. I like that idea. Interesting. Okay. Another part of creating a formal communication strategy, I think this is really key, is for them to have a really honest conversation internally about how can we best use our existing resources. And there's some things they're just not going to be able to do given the amount of money they have or given the staff. When you, for instance, were working with the Women's Crisis Services, how did that conversation go with how can we best use our existing resources?
Their situation was they hadn't really done anything in terms of beyond the bare minimum in terms of communication. So for, in their case, it was more about building communications capacity.
Okay.
So we're still moving in that direction a bit with them, but the example I like to use is when I got to the Daily Bread Food Bank, they had like a 16-page newsletter, and it was mailed out to maybe 1,000 or 2,000 people. But it was, in a city of a couple million, it was a very small proportion. And
that is small.
I could just see how much time it would, how much of my time even that it would suck up to prepare the content for that, and then you had the
huge
mailing costs and printing costs and all that kind of thing, and it just didn't seem like the return on that investment was going to be strong enough. And so what we did was this was back in the early days of e-newsletters, so we started to collect email addresses and send out a PDF e-newsletter.
Yeah.
And then we also took the printed off the PDF newsletter and sent it out with donor receipts and the annual report, which was a very old-fashioned style and was only of interest to people who went to the annual meeting, if that, turned that into more of a forward-looking, marketing-oriented document. And then that was the one piece that got mailed out to the mailing list, knowing that there were still a lot of people who preferred that kind of tactile experience. But they were getting probably a lot better information, and it was a lot better use of staff resources and money than the way things had been set up before I arrived.
Yeah, you know, and the other thing, too, is you find that out if you're talking internally and externally to people and you show them a 16-page newsletter, you chat about it. Do you read it? Did you find it interesting? Do you find it useful? No,
yeah.
Not really.
Organizations have big discussions around, wording and that kind of thing. And, yeah, it's really not worth the time investment.
No.
For a newsletter, generally, I would recommend probably 4 pages is enough, and the content should be relatively timeless so that somebody could read it on the day it came out or the day before the next one comes out and still get as much value out of it.
Yes, that's very good. Timeless information. That does make sense to me. If you're going to send out a print newsletter, let them read it at their leisure.
Yes, a long shelf life.
Yes, a long shelf life. And normally have some really good story in there along the way. You teach them a little, you pull them in, you make it worth their while to sit back and spend some time with you. Okay, we're going to take a little break for a word from our sponsor. We'll be right back.
Clifton Gunderson and Larson Allen, two national accounting firms, have come together to form Clifton Larson Allen. The combined firm serves more than 5,900 nonprofit and government clients. You can call on Clifton Larson Allen for help with financial and compliance audits, tax preparation, temporary or full-time accounting assistance, and to develop proactive financial strategies for tough economic times. Clifton Larson Allen cultivates long-lasting client relationships so they understand the issues you've faced and the challenges ahead of you. Learn more about Clifton Larson Allen on their website at www.cliftonlarsonallen.com. Clifton Larson Allen, noticeably different.
Welcome back to Nonprofit Spark. I'm your host, Renee McGivern, and you can learn more about me on my company website at sparkplugconsulting.com. I'm speaking this week with James Howe. He consults with nonprofits about communication strategy, social media, public relations, online and print communications, and more. His company, Communicate and Howe, is based in Kitchener, Ontario. Okay, and then finally, part of a formal communication strategy is determining a measurable indicator. So are you getting at how do we know this is working?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
You need to know whether you've had some sort of success. Ideally, you're looking back to the organization's goals and objectives and kind of figuring out from a communications perspective how you're going to try to enhance them. And then you're looking for at least one, if preferably more, concrete ways that you can measure how the organization's results achieving what you wanted to.
So what do you have in place for, like, your women's crisis services?
Like many other organizations that can be a bit of a challenge. But one of the benefits of having a communications or awareness strategy that where social media played such an important role is we did get some good statistics. So last year, for instance, we were trying to reach women 18 to 24, and we had some video-heavy campaign. We could tell from Facebook that most of our posts were reaching and engaging, which is even more important, women in that age group, and that would include the videos that we were sharing. And so we could conclude that we were reaching the people we wanted to reach with the content we had specifically made for them.
And really, going back to the other one about how you're best using your existing resources, this is how you know.
Yes.
In the end, is this worth our time and money? So you and I have been around long enough that we know putting together a 16-page newsletter is probably rarely going to be worth your time.
Yeah.
You've got to be darn good. It almost has to look magazine-like, you know, to pull them in. Beautiful graphics,
yes.
Everything else. The vast majority of nonprofits don't have that kind of internal staff support or the money for that.
No.
So there's some things you and I could pretty much tell a client, that is not going to be worth your money and time. And yet,
right.
There's some things like an e-newsletter or some different little parts of a campaign or your LinkedIn page. Okay, well, how would we know this is working? And let's just ask simply. It doesn't have to be like you have to be a statistician or something like that. But that's how you know that the money was well spent in a lot of ways. It's like that's worth putting our time into.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's, even I worked for the YMCAs of Cambridge and Kitchener-Waterloo, and we put a lot of time and effort into doing a great annual report, and it was really great for talking to prospective board members and funders and donors and that kind of thing. But then almost as soon as I was finished that, we're putting out a newsletter with brand new content, and I had a discussion with my CEO, and I said, I'm not really quite sure that we need this newsletter, and he was suggesting just use the content from the annual report. And at first, I kind of puzzled me, but then I kind of went with that direction and ran with it, and essentially we were able to use the most interesting parts of the annual report, the great pictures and great stories, and repackaged them within a four-page newsletter.
Yeah.
Without creating new content for people who hadn't seen the content in the annual report.
Yeah, that actually was genius, because not everybody's going to read that full annual report. Not everybody got the full annual report.
Yeah.
And it was a really good use of your time. If it was worth saying in an annual report, it's worth saying again in a newsletter. And in fact, there's a chunk of that. Let's say you had an infographic in the annual report. Oh, yes, I would put it on the homepage as an example on my website. So it's like,
oh, yeah, and all that content then can be used on your webpage. You could even have perhaps a video that gives more detail than you could have given in the story, either online or in either print form. Or even in that case, where I was initially was a little bit resistant, I figured out how I sort of take that idea and use it to make the most out of the time and effort and resources we were putting into the annual report.
Yeah, there was a time where I was really kind of anti-annual report because of that, the limited amount of time of the staff. I was with on the board of an organization on a communications and development committee, combination committee, by the way, communications and development. But I remember going, okay, how much time are you putting in this annual report, really? But as I got thinking about it, the same thing crossed my mind. All right, well, if we're going to do it, then let's do it really well, and let's use it and use it again and use it again and use pieces of it here and there. So suddenly what took 2 solid months of staff time, we got almost 6 months' worth of play off and on in various ways. So in the end, that was worth it.
Oh, yeah, you got to be very open to reusing content in as many different ways and as creatively as possible. People are getting so many messages, even if they got the annual report. Did they open it? Did they read all the stories?
Or did they remember it? And,
yeah.
And what's the matter if they read the story again, because it was a great story? We all read stories multiple times.
Yes, yes.
So that's the other thing I really like about that. Oh, one of the other things for communication strategies is to I like to put something in there about looking at the content that's being created throughout the organization all year long. So the annual report pulls together things from the finance department and from your program people. But your program people are walking stories with clients.
And usually the best source of stories.
They are the best source of stories. And they actually already may be writing some of that in grant proposals, or the grant writer is.
Right. Right.
Every time you're developing content, and let's say you have a new employee training, and you're explaining to them what's so cool about your organization, I'd go look at the new employee orientation program, and I'd go listen or see what was written about why we're great. It's like, great, I'm going to grab some of that content. So it doesn't all have to be originated with you, the communications person.
No, but the tough part sometimes is to get staff, especially frontline staff, to recognize the stories, because for them often they're everyday experiences.
Yes.
And they don't recognize that for somebody who isn't living that experience every day, it could be very interesting. One thing, though, that worked well when I was director of communications at the local YMCA, I think it's a broader YMCA part of broader YMCA culture, but there was a very strong storytelling culture, and so all meetings, for instance, started with somebody sharing a why story.
Oh, neat.
It might have been their personal why story, or it might have been the why story of a participant, and that helped in some ways to bring those kinds of great stories to my attention so that I could polish them up or pursue them and feature them, or even just give me an idea of kind of what was out there that you might be able to work with.
I could see that being part of a communication strategy, too, and the strategy is that we create more of a storytelling culture. That's very easy to implement at a meeting. You know, it's okay.
Well, I mean, they weren't long stories.
No. Right. Very good. Well, this has been interesting. Now, I noticed on your website you have an e-newsletter. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I have an e-newsletter where I share free strategic communications information, such as the posts for my ongoing series on how to create a nonprofit communications strategy. People are busy. The e-newsletter is a way for every 4 to 6 weeks for them to receive some of the very best, and it's easy to sign up. It just requires your email address, and the registration box is right on the very front page of communicateandhow.com.
Yes, that's communicate and how, H-O-W-E.com.
H-O-W-E, yes, because my last name's Howe.
There you go. Well, James Howe, thank you so much for being on Nonprofit Spark. This has been a great conversation and one of my favorite topics.
Thank you very much for having me.
Once again, you can learn more about James and what he has to say about communication strategy on his website at communicateandhow.com. That's H-O-W-E, communicateandhow.com. What a great way to begin 2014 with a communication strategy in hand. It's time to focus your energy and resources on communication that matters the most and has the greatest impact. So here are 6 elements of developing a communication strategy that James and I discussed during our interview. 1, start with some research and look at what other organizations are doing. Consider, too, why they're doing it. It'll help you figure out what works, what doesn't work, and what's going to work for you. 2, talk to internal and external stakeholders. So sit down and ask for feedback about your communications efforts with your colleagues there in your organization. Internal staff can provide you ideas and a fresh perspective about your messages, brochure, newsletter, and the like. They really know what's going on at your organization. Also, conduct a survey of people outside your organization and ask for their feedback about your website and materials and find out what they think about your organization and what it does. You'll know you're hitting the mark if they answer your questions in such a way that you can see that they understand what you do. 3, choose your audience. You'll get a lot farther with your communications if you have specific types of people in mind that you direct your messages to. So, for instance, develop a composite donor persona, like a 50-year-old professional female, for instance. The personas help you focus your communication. Number four, look at social media. And in particular, James says, set up a LinkedIn business account. Your website doesn't have to say everything there is to know about you. Your LinkedIn page, for instance, can focus on employment opportunities or board positions. And your Facebook page can host your photos and latest news. Five, ask yourself, how can we best use our existing resources? This question helps you discover what's doable given the time and talent in your organization. Hone in on what you'll be able to do well and edit out the rest from your action plan. Work on what you know you can do well. Six, determine a measurable indicator that tells you if your communication is effective. So for your website or e-newsletter, check your Google Analytics or Constant Contact report. For your Facebook page, how much participation is there with your audience? Now, I'm a big believer in communication strategy because as you develop it, cluttered messaging is cleared away and the authentic organization emerges. Now, keep in mind that in 2014, you can devise a strategy that hones in on a couple target audiences or one particular tool like an e-newsletter. And then in 2015, you can switch that up. You could target a different audience and a different tool. A strategy is fluid and responsive and keeps you in tune with your organization and constituents. Well, I hope you enjoyed the show. Follow me on Twitter at NonprofitSpark, one word, capital N, capital S. Email me with show and guest ideas as well. I'd love to hear from you. Just send me a note at nonprofitspark@gmail.com. Have a great week.
The staff of WebTalkRadio.net has a recommendation for those of you who are on the board of a nonprofit or work for one. Consider using a Nonprofit Spark show as a starting point for a great discussion about strategic planning, finances, fundraising, and more. All past shows are available in the archives. They offer a tremendous learning resource that you can access at your convenience. To learn more about Renee and her work, please visit her website at sparkplugconsulting.com. Or you can click on the globe on the screen in front of you. Thank you for listening, and we hope to see you again next week for another edition of Nonprofit Spark.